Stassi, right field, well struck, toward the wall, Max gone! Wow, that ball carry!
Not a good night for the boys in blue. The Royals fall to the Angels in Anaheim, 8-3. And they have now lost three in a row after winning five in a row. Let's hope there's no another 11-game losing streak in their future. 29-29 tonight, 8:38, first pitch at Anaheim. Chris Bubich, 1-0, ERA of 2.12, will be on the hill for KC. That was Stassi of the Angels, a home run in the fifth inning. As the Royals are down early 4-0, came back, made it 4-2. Jorge Soler with a home run, but the Royals fall 8-3. Offensively, highlights for the Royals, Salvador Perez, a couple of base hits, Hunter Dozier with three base hits. We mentioned Soler with a home run. But the story of the night is another Royals pitching prospect comes up, makes his debut, and can't get out. He is actually out of the game very early. Last night, Jackson Kilar was only allowed 39 pitches, although he had three wild pitches. He walked two guys, three hits, four runs. He was obviously nervous, and he lasted just two outs, two-thirds of an inning. His team was down 4-0. Irvin Santana stopped the bleeding a little bit, and the Royals then piecemealed the bullpen. The Royals only had to use four guys total, including Kilar. Here's Mike Matheny on his young pitcher's debut.
Perfect storm. I'm guessing we let him go longer. He's going to be standing out there later in the game. He's making pretty good pitches. Close misses. They fought off some pitches I didn't think that they would. Didn't have the command of this fastball. Put him in the spots to where he just wasn't able to pitch like he normally would. Just count down to the point where we had to protect him. Hated to take him out right there. Hated because he's throwing fine. Just thought they'd give him some more time, but I'm not going to put him in a spot to where we potentially put him at harm.
Try to throw his changeup, and that didn't work. He couldn't throw a changeup for a strike. 16 changeups and no strikes on his changeup. That's a problem. So Kilar, who was really good in AAA, at least he had some seasoning, if you want to call it seasoning, five starts at AAA there, but better than what Daniel Lynch had. And we'll see how many starts the Royals give Jackson Kilar. One of those things, I'm not going to freak out about it right now. I think he definitely, give him another couple of starts and see what happens like Daniel Lynch. We just got to hope it's not going to be like Daniel Lynch, and then it puts this team into a swoon. And, the Royals were just starting to come around. They did lose their last two, but they're starting to come around. And you go back to the Daniel Lynch call-up, the Royals were 16-10, and they lost 10 straight when Lynch came up, total of 11 in a row. Then they got things righted, and then they were 29-26. And then Kilar comes up 29-28, and they lose last night. Now you go, well, please, no deja vu all over again here. Let's not see the Royals go on a long streak when they call up a pitcher and then he struggles at the big league level. I don't know. I think Kilar's a little bit different than Lynch. That's just my opinion. We shall see. We'll find out next couple of starts, but it wasn't a good one last night. And Irvin Santana in long relief saved the bullpen, and the Royals had a chance, came back, made it 4-2, but they end up falling 8-3. So they will be back in action tonight in Anaheim. Chris Bubich on the bump against the Angels in Game 2 of that series. Looking at the standings in the American League Central, the Royals now 6.5 behind first place Chicago. The White Sox have a four-game lead over Cleveland. Tampa has a half-game lead over Boston. The Yankees now are in fourth place in their division. Darn, that's too bad. Oakland with a one-game lead over Houston in the AL West. The NL East, a 3.5-game lead for the Mets, are the only team with a winning record in that division. NL Central, really good race. The Brewers now, half-game lead over the Cubs, 2.5-game lead over St. Louis. And San Francisco has a game-and-a-half lead over San Diego, and the Dodgers are three games out. Dodgers are third place in their own division. So very interesting races early on, as we have played about 60 games. So almost everybody's played 60 of the 162. So 102 games still to play for most teams. The Royals still have 104 to play. So once again, it is a marathon, not a sprint. Local sports information, Dusty.
Yeah, eight-man all-star games is what we're focused on this week. Players are going to start coming into, they're going to come into town today, midday, and then coming up later this afternoon. They'll kind of get things rolling and have first practices coming up tonight. So we're looking forward to all that. Today we have features on 8manallstars.com on the Lincoln County All-Stars that are playing in the games. Tyler Good of Lincoln will be playing for the Division I East team coming up on Saturday. You can read all about his great senior season that he had and helping lead Lincoln to their first winning season since 2015 and their first playoff berth since 2010. Also, you can read about and hear about on our sportscast at noon, Trey Barrientos of Sylvan Lucas, who's a third All-Star from that family. His brothers Paul and Tyler played in the All-Star game in the past, and he's kind of carrying on the family tradition that started there with Sylvan Lucas. So So Trey Barrientos helped lead Sylvan Lucas to a 7-3 year this year and became one of the most feared linemen in the state in 8-man Division II. And you can read about him at 8manallstars.com. Again, if you missed those features, they'll also be posted or be playing on our noon sportscast today here on Katy Country 94. Then again, around 12:30 on Z96.3 The Lakes. So 8-man All-Stars, what we're focusing on this week with all of our area athletes. And we'll have continued coverage throughout the week from practices later this week. And then pep rally on Friday, games on Saturday. Looking forward to all of it here with the 36th annual 8-man All-Star Games in Beloit.
Yeah, pep rally at 4 o'clock, Chautauqua Park. We'll be emceeing the event. There'll be refreshments. Bring your lawn chairs. And then 7 to 8:30 will be the NCK Tech College Campus Tours, which is right there coinciding with Friday Night Lights. Friday Night Lights is at 8 to 10. Bring the kids out and the family, go up to the NCK Kansas Technology College Field. They got some football fields up there, practice fields, and enjoy free popcorn, music, and fun. And that should be a lot of time, a lot of fun. Bring your lawn chairs for that. There'll be a highlight reel at dusk that they'll play. They started this a few years ago and it was well received. So we continue to grow the 8-man All-Star Games because we came up with the idea of the pep rally, and that has grown from being downtown Beloit, and then it got bigger and bigger and bigger, and then it went to Chautauqua Park, so we have a little bit more shade, a little bit more area, you know, grass and everything else. And so we went and did that a couple years ago and then put it a little bit later in the day at 4 o'clock, and then they got the Friday Night Lights that they added a few years ago. Of course, got the 8-man All-Star Game Radio Network. They, you know, the 8-man All-Star Games there for a while. You there were people actually in town that didn't even know the games existed, didn't even know the games were happening, which was really sad. So we wanted to get involved and help promote the games and market the games and spread the word, not only in North Central Kansas, but across the state of Kansas. I think we've been able to do that. We have affiliates in Belleville. We have affiliates in Marysville and in Hutchinson as well. We've had Kiowa County before in the past too. So we've been able to try to get the word out about the 8-man All-Star Games. And now the Beloit Area Chamber of Commerce, Mitchell County Tourism has really jumped on board. Mm-hmm. And of course, the Chamber of Commerce was involved from the very beginning with the pep rally because I used to be a member of the Beloit Area Chamber of Commerce. I was the president actually there for a while. That's when I lost most of my hair. So anyway, did not get paid for that job, by the way. But anyway, that kind of got going, and the chamber got involved, which was great. And now we got Mitchell County Convention and Tourism that is getting involved, and other organizations on top of the ones already involved with, you know, there's Rotary and Club and Knights of Columbus and others. And so we still need younger people to get more involved in the 8-man All-Star Games because we have some people that are getting up there in age, no disrespect to them. They know it. And they've been doing all these things for all these years, and at some point they're going to say, you know what? I'm done. Yeah. And so we need other people to step up. And so it's good that we're getting more people involved. They got goodie bags now that they're doing to give to the players, which, you know, to me, that should have been day one, the first year they ever had it, probably.
Go to these bowl games, man, and you get those goodie bags. I'm an all-star. Give me something.
Give them something, right. Yeah, I mean, we used to 8-man all-star games. There were no signs, no welcoming signs, no nothing. Now we got some signs that are along the highway saying 8-man all-stars. So it's becoming a bigger deal when they arrive, which they're going to arrive today. So it's taken some time, but we're getting there, and more people have been involved. And listen, the community, not only Beloit, but the North Central Kansas area, and we're included in this as a radio station here locally, we've got to be proactive, because if we're not proactive promoting these games and talking about these games, Beloit is the only place that has the 80 best 8-man football players in the state of Kansas. It's the only place that has it. We're the site. We're the host, which is pretty cool. There are people that want to move this game. There are people that want to move these games to another site, including certain media members that, you know, want the plush, gigantic press box, and they want the field turf and everything else. There are people that are clamoring for it. There have been for a while. Now, whether or not there's enough momentum to be seriously concerned, I don't know. But here's the thing. You better not let it get to the point where it does become serious. And that's what everybody involved, the 8-man All-Star Games, whether it's their committee, whether it's the 8-man Coaches Association, whether it be radio stations, newspaper, whether it be local organizations that I already talked about, we have to step up our game, and I think we have. And we need to continue to step forward our game overall as a community to keep the games in Beloit. I don't think there's anything imminent to where we would lose the games, but I will say if we would have kept going the way we were, I think we'd be in much worse shape today than we were when we got involved, and not just us, but many other things got involved. Mm-hmm. It was a collaboration to where we suddenly started to open things up to more people got involved, because it's like the more brains you can put together and the more brainstorming you can do, the better things can become. And I think there was a period of time where it was overprotective for some reason. It didn't make any sense. And so we've gotten past that over the years, and we've been a part of this now. Well, I know, because my middle son was born on the day of the first games, and that was the most stressful day of my life, and probably one of Dusty's. I know he's had other days.
Nowhere
I know,
near what you went through.
Yeah, that was crazy. When my son was life watched.
I had to do my part on this end.
Yeah, I'm just still thankful this day that Dusty answered his phone at 2-3 in the morning, whatever it was, when I tried to get a hold of him, because if I hadn't, I don't know what would have happened. And then, you know, Clover stepped up to the plate, did a great job, Mike Schrant that day. And that was back in 2009. So I remember it, June 13, 2009, that's when Elijah was born. I rarely give out information about my kids on the radio, other than some silly stories. But if you don't know the background, he has Down syndrome, and he nearly died that day. And the doctors and the staff at Mitchell County Hospital Health System saved his life, and for the rest of my life, I'll be indebted to them, no matter anything that happens in the future. If I got to wait in the hospital, in the medical clinic, so, you know, I don't like it, sure, but I understand what they've done. And so that was a long day, but I know when we were involved, it was 2009. That's when we had our first chance. We were given an opportunity. We had fought for a few years very hard to try to be a part of the 8-Man All-Star Games. We are now part of the 8-Man All-Star Games now for 12 years. This will be the 11th game, I think, because we didn't have a game last year due to COVID-19. The pep rally we got started, I had some people tell me it was a dumb idea. I had people tell me that it ain't going to work. I had, and my comeback was, well, they didn't know if airplanes were going to work. They didn't know that if cars were going to work. We didn't know if indoor plumbing was going to work. But yet we tried it, and aren't we glad we did? And all of a sudden, I got a few people go, you know what? That makes some sense. I'm like, what do you have to lose by trying it? And I had people that were saying, well, this will never work, but they weren't willing to give it a try. Then eventually got them convinced to give it a try. And then those same people would come back, and to their credit, because some people, you know, they don't want to admit they're wrong. Mm-hmm. And to their credit, those people came back and said, you know what? That was a good idea. That went really well, better than I ever thought it would. And that, the pep rally has grown. And then that has led to Friday Night Lights, building upon something. Because in the past, parents showed up for the 8-Man All-Star Games. Here's where they went, to the football field, and then they went back to the highway, and the players never saw the town of Beloit. Mm. They never did. They would get to the college. They would stay there. They would walk to Sonic or Dairy Queen or Pizza Hut. That's where they'd go to eat, or they might, you know, whatever else would happen. And then they would go to football practices. Maybe if they went down to St. John's, they could see something going that way for practice. And then, of course, they go to the football
field.
You
see the east side of the highway.
You see the east side of the highway, though. I'm going to say, you don't go downtown Beloit. You don't see the whole city of Beloit. And so that was part of the idea behind the pep rally. Let's get people here the day before. And if they want to go ahead and get a hotel room, then we get people to spend money in our area for a hotel room. And there's a tourism tax and everything else. Get a little bit more money coming in, because the 8-Man All-Star Game should be an economic, I don't want to say boom, but it should be something that is beneficial to the community. So that was the thinking about pep rally, is get people in the day before, whether they drive locally, come into town and shop in town or do whatever they want, eat in town, and then go back. Or if they're further away, they might come all the way up the day before and then get a hotel room, and then they stay, and then they eat here again. Who knows? They might peruse, and they're already downtown, or in this case, drive through and see what downtown's like, going to the Chautauqua Park for the 8-Man Rally. And so they at least would see something about Beloit. So that down the line, when people, these young men that are part of the 8-Man All-Star Games, down the line, let's say 5 years from now, there's a job opening in Beloit, Kansas, or a job opening at Wakanda Lake or Glen Elder or Cocker City or wherever it might be along this area, they know where it's at. They know, well, you know what? That was a cool town. You know, we had this rally and we had this Friday Night Lights and the college was cool and they welcomed us and we had goodie bags. Oh, I remember that time I had at the 8-Man All-Star Games. And made great memories, and it was just something to do. And that stands out. And that could help you down the line have people come to your community. If you got to choose between a place you've never been to and a place that you at least know a little something about, usually that place you know a little something about has a slight edge in regards to where you might go, might move, might start your life out of college or whatever it might be. So there's a bigger picture that a lot of people years ago didn't understand. A lot of, it was a bigger picture that people didn't see the bigger picture. what they saw was eight-man games, let's get through it. I mean, there were people, I've had people admit that to me.
Oh, yeah.
We just want to get through the eight-man games, and we'll deal with the next year. You'd have all these ideas. Everybody wants to talk about ideas. And then a year, then you try to implement them a year later. Well, let's just try it again next year because, you know, because we're comfortable. We're comfortable in what we're doing. We don't want to change. We don't want to adapt, or we don't want to add things to do. And part of the issue with that is having people help you do those things. You know, it's one thing to come up with ideas. Okay, great. Now, how do you put that into effect? How can you implement that? How can you pull it off? It's one thing to have ideas. It's another to have people that are willing to do that, willing to take that idea and make it a reality. And that's where the Chamber of Commerce came in. And then all of a sudden we started growing and growing and growing with different ideas. And then more and more people get involved, like Mitchell County Convention and Tourism, Lucille Heller and others, and Julie Arabia of Lake Area Chamber of Commerce, and so many other people that I'm leaving out are suddenly now getting together and saying, hey, this is a huge event and this needs to be a bigger deal. It needs to be a bigger deal, and it has become a bigger deal. And so I love when I see a flyer, and I've got it right here in my hand, that has a whole list of activities I was just going through. You got the pep rally, 4 o'clock on Friday. You've got the Friday Night Lights, so you can get the community involved. Get some young kids that like football or don't like football. Don't matter. Bring them up. Bring the kids up. Have a good time. And then they may go someday down the line. They might be future eight-man all-stars. Who knows? It's important to get the community involved. And that is something that I think we've been able to accomplish with so many people's help since 2009 when we were able to be a part of it, because you've got to be able to promote what you have. You have something that no one else in the state of Kansas has. No one has the eight-man all-star games in the state of Kansas. Only Mitchell County does. Only the city of Beloit does. It is and should be a gigantic deal.
Mm-hmm. No doubt.
They're all stars. They should get all star treatment.
Yeah, every one of them. It's been crazy to see that grow into what we're going to see again here on Friday with all the activities that are happening. You can push that later in the day to make sure everybody stays right. They stay in town. You go to the pep rally, get up to the college, you go get something to eat, get up to the college, and then enjoy everything that's going on, right? And so there's not a big lull in between.
Right.
The pep rally and then the games on Saturday, mm-hmm. you have things to do the whole time you're in town. You
can make it a two-day event.
Yeah, it is. And it's kind of, you know, you probably compare it to like when you're, I mean, like you want to go to any kind of game. Like you want to go make a trip to a bowl game or something, a college bowl game. You want to have more than just go to the game activities to do, right?
Well,
you want to make it a thing. And I know this is a lower scale than a college football bowl game, but the point is, I mean, you go and make it something that you can enjoy as a family, and you know, you get to see your kids again before the game and talk to them about how their week's gone before you actually see them on Friday. I know we have text messaging and everything like that, but just to be able to get right in front of them and see how their week was and be able to talk to them about it. Or you know, if you're just a fan and it's one of your friends, you know, that's playing in the game, and I think it's great to have those opportunities to be around them and see what their week's been like before you actually just go see them knock heads and play in the football game.
Yeah, and then not only it gives a better chance to make memories for the parents and the families. Mm-hmm. I know I've had people, you know, there are people like have returned with multiple kids at different ages as we've gone through the last 12 years. They're like, I remember the pep rally in 2012. Or, you know, they'll say, I remember when this happened or that happened. Or, you know, the one guy did breakdancing on the streets of Beloit. You know, things like that. You create memories not just for the players, but you create memories possibly for families and extended family. It doesn't just have to be mom and dad. It can easily be grandma and grandpa, uncle, aunts, nephews, nieces, whatever the case may be, or friends. And so it has grown into something bigger. It needed to grow into something bigger. And I honestly think it can get even bigger than it is now.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's no reason to stop now. We can continue to strive to make it better each and every year. And you know, now, you know, there's a system set up, I was told the other day, where they have alternates ready to go in case somebody can't play an eight-man all-star games.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's two ways of looking at that. Dusty is looking at me, and I know we both are on the same page here. Two ways of looking at that. That's a great idea, all right? Why is it now we're just starting the alternate? I mean, why didn't we come up with that idea a lot sooner? Because there's every year it seems like there's a kid that can't make it, that was selected, was going to play, whether he gets hurt, whether he's got another commitment that pops up. And then you're scrambling to go find an alternate and then trying to gather the information. Whereas if you got four kids on standby All right. You even put them, is like, here, this is option A, B, C, and D, or 1, 2, 3, 4, or just say, hey, you know, you're an alternate. Can you play if we call you the week of the game? Could you play? And whatever they put together, they have now an alternate system from what I understand. That's a brilliant idea. And honestly, we should have had that for a very, very long time. But once again, that is a step in the right direction. We have to be willing to make changes and adjustments to make this whole thing better for everybody involved. And I think everybody has worked together to make that happen. And so I'm very proud of what we've been able to bring to the table. I'm very proud of what other people have done to step up. And I, like I said, I hate to mention organizations and by name and individuals by name. You know, Dave Dubert's done a hell of a job taking over, you know, and he is very organized and he has been very open to, you know, ideas and you know, hey, we're doing this or we're doing that. Now, of course, he's deserting us for a wedding this weekend, so I don't know where his priorities lie. I mean, come on, Dave. I mean, somebody's getting married. Eight-man games are once a year, Dave. Weddings could be like twice a year. I'm kidding. That's not. I hope not. I hope it works out for Trey. I really do. And his wife or future wife-to-be. Of all the weekends they had to have a wedding, that's the weekend they choose. Kind of like 12 years ago when I told my wife, when I knew we were going to get involved in eight-man games, I knew my son could be, you know, coming. I think the due date was actually like late June or early July because my son came early and emergency C-section. And I remember telling my wife, like, you can have this child any day of the year except June 13th. And then when did my son come? June 13th, the first year we were involved and working so hard, and this was supposed to be the icing on the cake for us to be all involved, and then it was just a stressful, stressful day, as we talked about. And so here we go again, 12 years later. Of all the weekends, there has to be a Dubert wedding. It's on eight-man All-Star Game weekend. Come on, man. Dave, Trey, where's your pool? Jerry, where's your pull here?
I told Trey, I was like, dude, you played in the game.
Come on, man. You and your brother, both your brothers.
Yeah, all your brothers. I mean, all the males in your family, yeah, your immediate family, have played in this game, listen, including your dad.
And if you put a helmet on Lauren, I think she could play too.
Yeah, definitely.
I know she wouldn't back down. So, I mean, for crying. Now, maybe it's a blessing in disguise. Dave can be like, you know what? Here you go. And yeah, he can run to the wedding and it'll work out great. So we wish them the best of luck with the wedding, but it is kind of funny. 12 years ago, I told my wife, no matter what you do, just any day but the day of the eight-man games. And, of course, we couldn't control that. And God has a sense of humor, apparently. And the Dubert's probably were. I'm sure there was a conversation at one point in time, probably, somehow, some way. And if you can just avoid this one weekend out of 52. Oh, all right. There we go. All right. Let's see. What's plan B here? How are we going to handle this? So... it'll be fun. So we thank Dave, and we thank everybody on the committee. We thank the Coaches Association for, you know, coming up with this whole thing years ago. And then it's been a matter of allowing people in to help carry the load and the burden to making it bigger and better for the kids. And it is a bummer, you know, those kids that were selected last year with COVID-19, you know, not getting to play in the game and getting this. They didn't get those memories. They were robbed of those. Yeah. And of course, we know lots of people have been robbed of memories and various things. And there's bigger things than an eight-man All-Star game, don't get me wrong. But still, those kids missed out on that last year, unfortunately.
Yeah. And I think, too, you talked about the Coaches Association starting. I think there's been an influx of younger coaches that have really, they've been here and understood what it is.
Yeah. And they value it.
Like Jeff Slater of Burlingame and McMillan at Madison.
Yeah.
I'm just kind of thinking of the younger guys that are here right now that have really kind of rejuvenated, I think, for the coaches side of it too, that they've seen it and understand. I'm not saying they don't all see it and understand what it is, but I can tell that some of these guys have really taken it and kind of run and made sure, you know, like the alternate thing, I'm sure that they have a lot to say about that and getting everything and getting that system in place. You can see the energy and love that those younger coaches are having and when they come here and experience it, and there's going to be more of them down the line that get to do that. And I think it's in good hands from that aspect of it too.
Yeah, we're seeing
different names that are getting involved, exactly. Because it was for a long time, you know, it was Don Melby and Chuck Fessenden, right?
Like, yeah, and Steve Tiernan was involved about every year,
all this stuff. Russ Steinbrock. Clyde was doing a lot of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And Dan Grizel at Maxville really did a lot of stuff. But they've actually kind of been able to delegate a little bit. And other guys have, I think, stepped in and done a really good job. I know Jeff's updating that website with videos of all their huddles and stuff like that for the KEMFA when they go. And, and it makes my job easier to find that information as well. And they get it out to us quicker than they ever have before. And they're excited about it.
If we don't have a link to that stuff, we might let our webmaster know to tie that into the Eight-Man website, because we have a 8manallstars.com. It's a central location for the rosters and previous 8-Man records, and we got a lot of information there for you to peruse. That's something that never existed until we got involved there. Our webmaster does a great job with that. And so you're right. You got younger people getting involved, so now they're a little bit more technology savvy, and they're more willing to do these type of things, or just naturally know how to do those things. And I think that's a bit of my concern. Is like, I agree with you. I don't think, you know, there are younger coaches getting more and more involved, and that's awesome. I think the concern I think some people have, and I think it's this way in a lot of places. When you have events, you have to have staff that volunteer their time and not getting paid to pull this whole thing off. And do we have enough people that are willing to step into places like Barb and Charles Axtell? And they're not going to be doing this their whole lives. They've done a wonderful job with the program and all the work they put in all the years, and with the ads. And then, of course, they've taken pictures, and Barb was the late call. And, you know, and so you've got people. That's just one example. You've got lots of people that are older that have certainly could easily say, you know what, I've done this enough. Somebody else take the torch, the baton, and let's go. And then some years it's like, oh, it's okay. You just do it one more year. And then you just keep trying to get as many years out of people that have put in more than enough time. And so I think that is a concern down the line, not only with this event, but any event for that matter across the country. Yeah. It seems like, do we have enough volunteerism? Do we have enough younger people that are going to take the time to be a part
of
it?
People that have certain talents that can volunteer that for something bigger than
what
they are, you know?
Absolutely. So, but I think you made a great point about the younger coaches being involved. And so we'll work on continuing to improve our website, 8manallstars.com. We'll continue to work on improving our broadcasts. We have sideline interviews with the players during the games. We've had some very funny things that have been said over the years about that, especially when it comes to food, it seems. Todd and Dusty and I will be bringing you the call coming up on Saturday. 9:30 pregame, kickoff at 10 for the Division II All-Stars, 1 o'clock pregame, and 1:30 for the Division I All-Stars. It's the 80 best players in the state of Kansas, and they only come together in one place in the entire state, and that is Beloit, America. Beloit, Kansas at Trojan Field. So we look forward to the kids and the players coming in. And Dusty will be at practices later on this week, reporting here on the Sports Ticket. We'll go to him live from the field, talk to some of our local players. And we look forward to all of that. Once again, coverage starts at 9:30 on Saturday on KD Country 94 and KDCountry94.com and 8-Man All-Star Game Radio Network. The Pep Rally Friday at 4, and then Friday Night Lights from 8 to 10 there at the football field there at NCK Tech. Anything else you want to add about 8-Man games?
I think that we covered.
We got plenty time to talk about more stuff as we go throughout the week. No doubt about it. So we appreciate everybody that makes all that possible. Okay, let's see, where we go next? College World Series for softball, Oklahoma. I've had this feeling that once they lost to James Madison, they're so good that that's their wake-up call, and they're a deep enough team they could make it to the finals, and they did. They beat James Madison back-to-back days, had to beat them twice to get to the final. Oklahoma's there. How about Florida State? They had to win two straight against Alabama. They get it done. So Oklahoma and Florida State had to win four games in a row to stay alive, to get to the championship finals. You don't see this very often. So now Oklahoma, number one team in the land, will take on Florida State, who's the 10th best team in the land, but they're the best two teams now. And they're going to meet in a best 2 out of 3 in a College World Series championship there in Oklahoma City at Bricktown, and that will be beginning today. So that should be exciting. And I have to say, I think softball has some momentum. I think women's softball has some momentum. They start to get more and more exposure on the regular ESPN instead of being relegated to ESPNU or ESPN2. They're making some headway. And we've seen some amazing, you know, plays and performances in the Women's College World Series. There is momentum with women's softball, and they need to capitalize on it. And I think they're doing a pretty good job.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So pretty exciting stuff. Oklahoma and Florida State. Is that Chris Winkie and Josh Heupel? No? Okay.
No.
I remember that 13-2 scintillating championship game. Remember that one? That was Bob Stoops' only national championship.
Yeah, when Florida State had some guys that did some things and got suspended, and
and Winky was 32 years old. Actually, I think he's 26, believe it or not.
Yeah, I was looking forward to it, and then all that stuff happened, and then it ended up being a dud.
It was a dud. There's no doubt about it. The NBA playoffs last night, the Suns get a win over the Nuggets in game one.
They'll accelerate and push court feed, intercept the Bridges. It's a three, make it to Payne, 3-on-1. He finds Bridges on the other end. Payne to Bridges.
Suns were down there in the third quarter and then just absolutely got red hot. And I thought Mike Malone, the coach of the Nuggets, waited way too long to take a timeout. And the Suns just got hot, just like a Sun would be. And the Suns get it done last night. Chris Paul was awesome in the fourth quarter. He finished with 21 points. And it was Mikal Bridges. You remember him playing at Villanova? He was more of a defensive stopper. He had a great game last night. Let's see. I'm going to pull that box score up because I think Bridges actually scored more than Paul did. Let's see here. Where the Suns at? Points. Yeah, Bridges had 23. Devin Booker, Chris Paul, 21. 20 for DeAndre Ayton, and he had 12 rebounds. 14 points for Jay Crowder. He's been hitting the three-pointer when he's wide, wide open. And then for the Nuggets, Jokic was 22 points and 9 rebounds. He did not have a great night. Aaron Gordon, a nice game with 18 points. Watching that game last night, DeAndre Ayton, his numbers was a wash with Jokic. And if the Nuggets are going to win the series, Jokic can't have the same numbers that DeAndre Ayton has.
No.
There's no way the Nuggets are going to win the series. I mean, Jokic is going to have to make some adjustments. Ayton has been phenomenal in the playoffs so far. I mean, absolutely phenomenal. Shooting like 78% from the floor. And he is really, he looks like he's 40, but I think he's like 24. But he looks like he's 40. You know, like Perry Ellis. Remember how everybody thought how old he was? He looked like he was a 40-year-old man, and he was, you know, 20. So the Suns win last night 122-105. And then the Nets and the Bucks, that was all Nets last night. At one point, the Nets led by 49 points. In a NBA playoff game in the Eastern Conference semifinals. Kevin Durant was sensational, 32 points in just three quarters of play, 22 for Irving. And listen, we talked about Giannis, and we said kind of two different things. We said yesterday that he's going to have to do more, even though his stat line looks really good most games. Like, he can go out there and play horribly, and he's going to have, like, 18 and 11. And that's what he had last night, 18 points, 11 rebounds, but only one offensive rebound. That should be noted. 8 for 15 from the floor. The other night was 16 and 24, and they still lost by double digits, or almost double digits, lost by 8. Mm. But in fairness to Giannis, on the flip side of this, is that first of all, last night Giannis was the third-best player on the floor, and he's got to be the best player on the floor for the Bucks to have any chance. And in fairness to Giannis, that's difficult to do when Harden, Durant, and Irving play for the other team, and they arguably could be three of the top 10 players in the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
Some could say three of the top five, possibly. Just depends how you want to argue it. Now, Harden was out again last night, and Landry Shamet's a nice role player for Wichita State. He's done a nice job. Their bench has come around. Blake Griffin suddenly, we see his dunk last night. He couldn't even dunk in Detroit for 3 years, and he's dunking in the face of Giannis. It's like he's suddenly become young, the drink the fountain of youth or whatever it might be. But the Bucks, they added pieces. A P.J. Tucker defensively. Chris Middleton got the big contract, and he's an all-star, but he's not a superstar. Drew Holiday's a really good point guard, and that's definitely made them better, but he's not Kyrie Irving. You know, the Bucks to me have poor man. They have a poor man Kevin Durant and a poor man Kyrie Irving. Because Drew Holiday's a really nice player, an outstanding player, and a great person, does great things off the court as well. Kyrie Irving is just a much better player.
Yeah.
And Drew Holiday is a really good player. It tells you how great Kyrie Irving is. And Chris Middleton is an outstanding basketball player. He's an all-star, got a max contract. He doesn't hold a candle to Kevin Durant. And then Harden, if you want to compare anybody, I don't know how you want to compare him to, but the bottom line is this: Giannis needs more help, but I don't know if anybody has enough help to beat Durant, Irving, and Harden in the Nets the way this is going. You know me. When this first happened, I was cheering for the Nets for it to implode. I don't like the super teams. I've never been a fan of the super teams. I didn't like it when LeBron went to Miami to join Bosh and Wade. I did not like it when Durant joined the Warriors with Klay and Steph and Draymond. And I did not like it when Harden went to the Nets. I thought Irving and Durant was plenty. And honestly, it is plenty. Last night, Harden didn't play. Harden hasn't played but a minute and a half of the series, and the Nets have cruised. So Can we just go ahead and say it? Harden, rest up and get ready for the NBA Finals. Just get ready for the final series. Because you may say, well, wait a minute, Wade. I follow the NBA. Did you forget that the Nets still have to win two more against the Bucks, and then they got to play another series before the NBA Finals? No, I didn't forget that. Then, as long as two of the big three, that's the great... This is why I hate the super team thing. superstar team. Two is bad enough. Three, you don't even need three. It's like overkill. Yeah. So one of the guys can't play. Woe is me. I still have Durant and Kyrie. Oh, wait a minute. Kyrie's out. He doesn't feel like playing for a week. Ah, insert Harden. As long as, honestly, the Nets still could win a title with one of them. But with two of them, definitely. Three of them, should we just hand them the trophy? Because I did not think this was going to work. I thought there was not enough basketballs for their egos and everything else, yeah. Especially Irving. Irving has fit in pretty well. He likes playing the two-guard position, even though the ball's in his hands a lot. Harden has done a great job of scaling back point-wise and shot-wise, and he's been a distributor. He's been terrific, and he's been the key, in my opinion. And I am not a big James Harden fan in regards to the way he got his way out of Houston. I thought that was the wrong way to do it, but he got his way, so I guess it was the right way. I've seen Harden in big games disappear. I've seen James Harden basically get Chris Paul run out of town, which how do you do that? And then you bring in Russell Westbrook, and that doesn't make sense. I've seen James Harden quit in big games, in fact, and I've seen him quit playing defense. But I will give him credit, and I can be objective to say this. James Harden has made the Nets better, but also he went in and didn't rock the boat. He didn't go in and have to get – and there's times where it was just him and Kyrie or just him and Durant. They hardly ever played together, all three. Mm-hmm. And Harden still was distributing, getting all in game in the first series. He had a game where he had 18 assists and like 15 points. He knows he doesn't have to score 30 every night because he got Durant and Irving. And if one of those guys is off, it don't matter. It just doesn't matter. Last night, two guys were on, and the role players are really. I mean, because when Irving can drive, and if he does, if two people collapse, all you got to do is kick it. And you got Joe Harris, who's one of the best 3-point shooters in NBA. Who's a spot shooter. He's like Kerr for Michael back in the day for the Bulls. And you've got, you can kick it out to Durant. Or you need to go down low, you got a mismatch, Durant, good luck, Chris Middleton, guarding Durant in the post. Oh, they're going to double? Oh, gee, I'll just throw it to Kyrie and let him do his thing. The Nets, I'm gonna say it. I didn't think it was going to work out. I was really, really, really pulling for it not to work out. It still might not work out. But to me, the only way this doesn't work out for the Nets is if they get hurt. Maybe all three.
Yeah.
Because the Bucks are, I think, the second best team in the East. They're getting pummeled. Last night was embarrassing. They lost by, 39? They lost by 39. They were down 49. I mean, does anybody possibly think the Bucks are going to win this series? I don't even know if they're going to win a game. And the Nets are only going to get better because they only had seven games where the big three played together. Mm-hmm. And now they still aren't together, and they're still winning easily against a great team, a really good team. I don't see how the Sixers are going to beat the Nets in seven games. And if the Hawks get there, the Hawks don't have enough firepower. So I don't know if there's anybody. In the West, I'm sitting here going, the Suns, but I don't think they're quite ready for that level because they're still a young team. Although DeAndre Ayton keeps playing like he does, who knows? I mean, they've got Booker, Paul, and Ayton. If Paul gets healthier by then in the finals, that'd be an interesting matchup. I don't like Chris Paul guarding Kyrie Irving. And I'm looking at the Jazz. They're a really well-oiled machine, and they are a team that plays good defense, and they have a guy inside that can change games and Gobert, and they do have tons of guys that can kill you from three. The Jazz might be the most equipped team to take out the Nets. Mm-hmm. They very well could. And I would be cheering for them to do that. I just have come to the conclusion that the Nets, the only way they lose and not win the title is if their guys get hurt or they self-implode. Their worst enemy is going to be themselves. Their biggest opponent is not going to be the Bucks, the Sixers, the Hawks, the Suns, the Nuggets, the whoever, the Jazz. It don't matter. The Clippers. You know, Clippers, Nets would be interesting, I guess. I just don't see the Nets being beaten. And it hurts me to say that.
Yeah, it's like I don't see them for sure being beaten until they get to the finals. And then maybe, like you said, the Jazz, maybe the Suns, if Paul just gradually gets a little bit healthier. It's hard to do when you're playing every game in an intense two more series, though, for Phoenix if they even make it that far. I mean, it's impossible to believe that Chris Paul is going to be ready to go for an NBA Finals series when he's taking on Denver right now and probably Utah. if Phoenix makes it that far to the right. finals. I mean, that's going to be two grueling series for him.
Yeah.
So I don't think Phoenix, even if they get there, is going to pose a lot of problems for Brooklyn if they stay mentally strong, right? And if they are healthy. I think there's a different dynamic if KD's the one that gets hurt and it's just Kyrie and James Harden, because then I think it could implode. Like, who's the guy that says, I'm taking over now?
In the big game.
And who's going to defer?
Right.
Like, who's going to – and obviously I think in that situation it would be whoever's got the hot hand is the guy, right?
I agree.
But will they agree to that? And I think KD, I think, is going to be the kind of the steadying force of all that for Brooklyn right now. And if he stays healthy – it's hard for me to see anybody beating them. And but again, it's about, again, they still haven't all three played together a lot. And so when the, if it gets close and down to crunch time at the end of a game and in the NBA Finals against Utah, say, and things are not going their way, how's that going to end up? We haven't really seen that. But we haven't seen it because they've been just dominating teams. Like, they don't even get that close. You don't have to worry about what's going to happen toward the end.
I will say this, a couple of things. One, the Bucks aren't that good defensively. We've seen this year they've gotten tons of points. So the Jazz are much better defensively. The Suns are underrated defensively. The Clippers are a pretty good defensive team. I mean, you've got George and Kawhi. You got different guys that can guard and switch and everything else. So that the Clippers Nets might be the most intriguing series. I've got Cole sent me a deal. He said the Jazz are going to win it all. I hope he's right. I hope he's wrong. I want the Suns to win it all.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the Jazz are the best bet out of the West to win it all. I think the Jazz-Clippers series, probably the winner of that's got the best chance to beat the Nets, to be quite frank. It would be ironic if Steve Nash, former Sun, would end up playing the Suns in the NBA Finals and losing to the Suns. I would really enjoy that myself, and I love Steve Nash. He was one of my favorite players. But the Suns are fun to watch. I think they're still maybe a year away from you know, being right. I mean, they're a title contender. Don't get me wrong. I just don't think they're gonna come in and win it all with the no playoff experience. I mean, they got Paul, but you know, the other main guys are very young. But here's my question: what is your game plan defensively against the Nets? Like, what do you do? Okay, so Durant catches it in the low block. If you don't double, he's going to kill you.
Mm-hmm.
If you double, and we're not even talking Kyrie. Joe Harris is one of the best three-point shooters in the game. You're leaving guys wide open for three-point shots. Wide open. And we've seen what the Suns have been doing. I mean, Jay Crowder had like 10 seconds to shoot a three last night because Paul and Booker set everything up for him. I mean, Landry Shamet's a good three-point shooter. He made three last night. Kyrie made four. Kyrie's not a bad outside shooter. People underestimate. I mean, of course, he had one of the biggest threes in NBA Finals when he hit that three over Steph Curry, remember? That helped LeBron win that title.
Mm-hmm.
So the Nets have guys that can shoot other than Irving and Durant from the perimeter. And then, of course, you bring Harden into the fray. Like, I'm sitting here. I don't know what your defensive game plan is, and Harden's not even playing.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you do when Harden plays? I mean, I don't. If I'm Mike Budenholzer, is that his name?
Budenholzer.
I mean, he's a good coach. He's a very supposedly a good defensive minded coach. I just don't know what you do. I do not know what you do. Okay, so you're going to put Giannis on Durant? Let's say Giannis can play Durant one-on-one. Let's just say straight up Giannis can hold his own. Straight up, you don't have to double. Okay, great. Who's guarding Irving? Yeah. Drew Holiday's going to stop Irving? Nope. Nobody's stopped Irving or Durant yet. I don't know what you do. It's kind of like what do you do when the Chiefs' offense is rolling? How do you slow it down? How do you stop it? People say what? You got to get pressure on the quarterback. Mm-hmm. And we saw the Buccaneers do that because the Chiefs are missing both a left and right tackle because of injuries. How do the Nets get beat? And maybe we're focusing on the big three, and we should be focusing on if Joe Harris gets hurt, it's a big loss. You know?
Yeah.
Who knows? Maybe Blake Griffin's a guy that is more valuable than we're giving him credit for. Our Landry Shamet off the bench, who scores 9 points in 15 minutes. That's good production.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they are more than just those big three. Right now, they've got the big two, and other guys are playing well, and they're beating teams by 39 points that aren't chopped liver. I just don't know what you do defensively. I don't.
No, that's why you build the team like they did, right?
That's
because
right.
It makes it. I mean,
the Nets don't. The Nets don't even have to be great defensively.
No,
but that's the thing. The Nets defensively are getting better. That's the scary part.
Yeah,
too.
It's. I mean, it's no secret why people are building these teams like this, and you have a guy like KD on your team. I mean, when you get a guy like KD that can do everything on the floor, like whatever you want him to do, he can pretty much do it.
Listen, when he's healthy, he
play
is
all five positions.
He's the best or second best player in the league.
Yeah,
without question.
When you get a guy like that on your team, it just changes everything of what you can do. And so now, like a Joe Harris or these other guys, I mean, their game gets maximized because of everybody else that's on the court at the same time, right? Because you can't take care of everything. You can't guard everything. And we say there's only one ball. Well, yeah, there's only one ball, and there's only one defender on that ball most of the time because you can't – it's hard to make the decision to double anybody because Harris or Irving or Harden, somebody's going to be open if you're just sitting here focused on, hey, we need to try to slow down Kevin Durant. And so your biggest – I think always your best option if KD is on the team is to – he's going to get his no matter what. So you've got to try to figure out a way to slow that outside shooting down.
I agree.
And how do you do that, though? That's then that's when the question comes in. How do I do that, though? Like, it sounds like a good idea, right?
Sure.
KD's going to get his. Let's slow down the perimeter shooting so they're not scoring as much. But how do they get it? How do you get to that point? And you don't. That's the point of having a team like the Nets have and like the Warriors had for a little bit there and building it like that.
Like, when you play against the Nuggets last night, and Charles Barkley said it, and I totally agree with him, is he says you let Jokic get his points.
Yeah.
But when the Nuggets are dangerous is when Jokic has a triple-double. That's when they're unbeatable because that means he's getting everybody wide-open shots.
Yeah.
There's only one guy that gets his own shot, and Porter can too. So you got Michael Porter, and you've got Jokic. And Porter's still a young guy that has defensive deficiencies yet. But he's an outstanding scorer. He can fill it up. He's kind of streaky, but he can fill it up. But as Charles said last night, let Jokic have his 30 or 40. Because if he's scoring 30 or 40, that means other guys aren't getting involved. And maybe, the only thing is, Jokic doesn't have a Kyrie Irving. He had Jamal Murray.
Yeah.
But is that all you got left if you play the Nets is let Kevin, if Durant wants to go off and shoot it a lot and score 50, that actually would make other guys not have a rhythm and you're better off. I mean, you're going to have to score well over 100 to beat the Nets anyway. But, you know, let Durant have his 50 and let him hog the ball if he needs to, and he gets hot and he wants to keep shooting it, but then suddenly Kyrie's not getting his shots and maybe he gets a little perturbed, or Kyrie doesn't get into a rhythm, and then Harris is out of rhythm, and then Shamit's out of rhythm. And I mean, is that maybe and that sounds like, to me, that's fool's gold. I mean, to me, that's like, this is all we got. But maybe that's the way to go, is like, you know what? Let Kevin Durant go one-on-one. Let's not double. Because the theory always is when you double, you get the ball out of this guy's hands, you make other people beat you. But I'm going to tell you right now, the teams that are left in NBA playoffs, they are too good of shooters to be so wide open. And I mean, Jay Crowder is not a great outside shooter. He is drilling threes left and right because what they're doing is they're doubling Booker. The Lakers did it, and they paid the price. They're doubling Booker, getting the ball in his hands after he has a big game. And guess what happens? Now you got Chris Paul who can beat you with a mid-range jumper. Mikal Bridges is now making threes. Crowder's making threes. I'm going to tell you something. I would have shot 35 to 40% in the NBA from three if I had all that time to shoot.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to tell you that right now. Now, I wouldn't have been able to defend where the darn end had been big-time mismatch left and right. So don't get me wrong. I'm not saying I could play in the league, people. But if I was open, my percentage would have been pretty good. These guys are pros, and they're not going to miss these shots left and right typically.
Yeah.
So if you, it used to be you double, you just make sure that guy doesn't beat you. Now you double, you've got for the Nets, Kyrie or Harden or somebody else or one of the best 3-point shooters in the league, Joe Harris, is going to kill you. So are you better off not doubling anymore? It used to be that's what you did automatically. Mm-hmm. Are you now better off, like Charles said, let the guy have his big points. Just let him have a whole bunch of points. Everybody else is not involved. They become a spectator. Think about it. What did the Clippers do? Luka Doncic got 29 points in the first half the other day, and the Mavericks were behind by 2 at halftime.
Yeah.
The Clippers basically said, you know what? Luka can have his points. We'll give him some points. We're going to try and make it hard. We're going to try and make him labor to get his points. But they didn't double him very often.
No.
They didn't. They made Tim Hardaway try to make shots, and he couldn't.
Yeah.
And that's why he needed somebody to rely on, and that was kind of the strategy. And that's what Barkley's saying with Jokic. And I have to say, I think Kevin Durant could score 60. Easy. But that doesn't mean they're going to win. Think about Michael Jordan back in the day. I'm going to tell you, and somebody needs to look this up, I'm sure, but there's a number on it. But I remember growing up, when Jordan scored like 50, 60 points, the Bulls struggled to even win.
Mm-hmm.
But when Jordan took his time, and he might have had like 8 points in the first half, and then it was fourth quarter, time to take over. And at the end of the night, you looked at the box score, and Jordan had 34. The Bulls almost always won.
30 to 40 is the magic number.
Right.
For
Jordan, it was 30 to 40. If you scored 25 to 40, they won.
Yeah.
But when he scored 50 or more, I mean, all you got to do is look at that playoff game where he scored 63 against the Celtics. Now, he didn't have a lot around him, but the Celtics tried everything they could, but nobody else had a rhythm offensively in that game because Jordan took the shots, and why wouldn't he? He was making everything.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of times you see guys score a lot of points, but that does not translate into winning when one guy takes all the shots. Devin Booker scored 70 in a game, and his team lost comfortably.
Yeah.
So maybe that's the strategy, and that's all you got left. You know what? You know the key to beating the Nets? Let Durant score 60. Sounds weird, but maybe that's all they got left.
And listen, I fully believe that strategy in a lot of different cases. Mm-hmm. Like I see it a lot in high school.
Oh, in high school, I agree with you.
Like, okay, this team has, and that's why you like a lot of in these colleges too.
The only thing in high school though, a kid goes nuts on you. If you double, you can make other kids that aren't nearly as good as shooters. And you don't let that
I'm
guy
talking
beat
like
you.
A good team in high school, right, like we're team. Talking about with
right.
the Nets here.
Yeah, right.
Now, if there's only one player on the team.
Right, you got to get the ball out of his hands.
You get it out of his or her hands.
Right.
You know, I get that. But
right.
I'm talking like a good
sure.
team in high school. It's
sure.
like, dude, let this guy get hit. I'm pretty sure that's what St. John's did in their first postseason game this year, the boys against Wakefield. They're like, we're going to let this guy get his because we don't want anybody else beating us.
Right.
And you know, a couple shooters that might be able to play well. And he ended up getting his points, and they ended up winning. St. John's Tipton did. But it depends on what the team is, obviously,
sure.
in high school. But I mean, that's why you've seen these college teams recruiting just guys that shoot. I mean, shoot and play defense.
That's
right. And if you're not a stud with the handling the ball,
you don't have to be.
Or whatever, just find your spot and they'll find you.
That's
if they're
right.
not doubling,
that's right.
or if they are doubling, I mean to say, mm-hmm. they'll find you.
Yes.
And you're going to knock down shots and teams are going to have an issue beating you. And so that's why, I mean, you see just sharp shooters that are just standing around a lot of time. I mean, within the offense, they're
sure.
moving, but finding spots and getting beat that way. And that's just where the game's gone, I think, ever since we really saw it first with the Warriors.
Mm-hmm.
To have success with it, a lot of teams tried to do it.
Right.
But if you don't have the shooters and you don't have the mm-hmm. ball handlers that can bring in that defense,
right.
it's not going to work.
Yeah.
And so I fully believe in that strategy right now because there's too many guys.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's one guy that will buy into that, Kevin Durant's smarter than that, though, so that's
right.
one of the big problems with that strategy.
Right.
But I don't know. You got to find out something to do.
And the game is about spacing now, so you're going many times you're going four out and one in. So now you're just spreading the floor, and that's hard to defend. And if you got good shooters all the way on the perimeter, all you need is Kyrie Irving to drive it, kick it. Drive it, kick it. Throw it in the Durant. Oh, here comes a double, kick it. Find the open man. And Durant's 6'11". He can see over the defense. I mean, that's the one thing. If it's a smaller, you know, when Charles Barkley, who was listed at like 6'6", but he wasn't. He was like 6'4.5". You double Charles Barkley with two big guys. Okay, that was super effective. That doesn't work on Durant. That's mm-hmm. another thing that doesn't work. You bring in the double, he can see it. He can see even over it many times.
Yeah.
He's going to find the open man. And I'm just glad I don't have to figure out how to stop the Nets right now because – the Bucks are really good, and the Bucks look like a junior high team last night. It was brutal.
Yeah.
It was brutal. And now, granted, one more thing I'll say, we'll move on. But a lot of times when a team blows the you-know-what, blows the doors off another team in playoffs, many times the next game, completely different. And in many times, you change locales, and that's what's going to happen. They're going to Milwaukee. And the Bucks were embarrassed. And if the Bucks don't bring their best effort this season in the next game, then that's going to be embarrassing for their organization. The Bucks, the Nets got to be prepared for the Bucks' best shot all season in game three. And sometimes a wounded animal is a dangerous animal. And I remember the Celtics and the Lakers. It was the Boston Massacre. And the Lakers in the NBA Finals got rolled by like 40 by the Celtics.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody's talking about how the Celtics had the Lakers' number and the Lakers couldn't figure it out. And the Lakers bounced back and won that series. So, and I remember the Spurs whipped the Thunder badly, as we talked about the other day, and came back and won 4 in a series. So I'm not sitting here going to say the Bucks can't. Well, I'll say it. I don't think the Bucks can win the series, okay? I don't, but I will say this. I think the Bucks can change the narrative somewhat with a great performance in game three. I think everybody's writing the Bucks off completely, as I am. And I think everybody's saying, listen, the Bucks will be lucky to win a game. But if there's ever a game they're going to get, it should be the next game, which makes really not – some people may say that makes no sense. They just lost by 39, down 49. How is the next game going to be their game? First of all, they're going to go to their hometown crowd. They're going to have their fans behind them, and their backs are against the wall. And the Nets are probably going to relax a little bit, just like they did when they went to Boston and lost game three. That's what the Nets did in Boston. Boston was on the ropes. They didn't look good the first two games.
No.
And the Celtics stole one, and then the Nets, boom, put their foot down and rolled the next two games. I can see the Nets doing the same thing here. Let up, make it interesting, help the NBA for, you know, audience participation and ratings. Bucks win game three, if you believe anything being rigged. Bucks win game three, and then the Nets stomp on them. I could see that happen. I think the Bucks are too – I think they're good enough, obviously, to get at least a game. But there is no way the Bucks – sorry, I'm going to say it, and I will eat crow. There is no way the Bucks win four of the next five to win this series. No way, unless Durant and Irving and Harden are all on the sidelines in street clothes. That's the only way.
Yeah, it's – you're seeing it. I mean, if you can't – you lose by almost 40 without Harden even out there.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't see it at all.
I don't either.
And by making that prediction, we're going out on a limb about as long as this microphone
I'm going to say we're not making some kind of rocket science prediction here. No. I don't like to jump on bandwagons and I don't like to be a follower. I like to be a leader. I don't want to be a part of the crowd. I want to stand out, that type of thing. When we talk about sports and this and that and give a different take, I can't give you a different take on this one. I just can't. The Hawks and the Sixers, that's game two tonight. Sixers really need to win that one. I hear the Sixers in a must-win situation. That's baloney. We always overreact, knee-jerk reaction. The Sixers are not in a must-win situation. They are down 1-0. If they go down 2-0, they win game three in Atlanta, suddenly everything's okay. All right? They're back in the series.
Mm-hmm.
All you need to do is go back a week, actually just a few days. The Clippers are down 2-0 after losing the first two games at home. And everybody's like, well, it's the game two, they were talking about a must-win for the Clippers. Now, game three is, I think, a must-win. I think that's a must-win, although technically it's not. The only time that it's a must-win is when you're facing elimination.
Right? Like,
that's technically a must-win. It's a must-win. When it's 2-1 and they got to win game four at home, it's a must win. No, it's not. They can lose game four. Teams have come back from 3-1 deficits. Not a lot, but it's not a must win. The Sixers don't have to win tonight. They can still win this series. All right. Now the Bucks, I'm going to sit here and contradict myself. They must win game three to have any chance. But technically, it's not a must win. They're not eliminated. The Bucks could lose game three and win the next four, and it don't matter. We know that's not going to happen.
No.
Sixers and Hawks game two tonight, 6:30 in Philadelphia. If Embiid was great last game, and who knows what he'll do this game. And Trae Young's been phenomenal. Jazz Clippers. This is a very intriguing series. Who you picking in this one? Jazz Clippers, 9:00 tonight on TNT. I tell you what, I'm going to go Jazz in this series in seven. But the Clippers getting past that hurdle of winning a game seven after falling apart last year against the Nuggets, I think that'll bode well for them down the stretch. But I think Rudy Gobert is going to be difference in the series, and I'm taking the Jazz in seven.
Yeah, I'm picking the Jazz. I'll just say six to be different. I think it's going to be a tough series no matter who comes out on top. But
I'm picking the
Jazz. I don't want the Clippers to win, so I'm picking the Jazz.
Ah, I see how you're going. That's at 9 o'clock tonight. Both those games tonight on TNT, by the way. And for your hockey fix.
Suzuki. Checked by Pullman. Comes free to Caulfield out front. They score! Tyler Toffoli wins it! Montreal is moving on!
Montreal wins last night in hockey after being down 3-1 in the first round series. They have now won 7 straight playoff games. They won their last 3 to win that series in 7, and now they knock off the Jets in a sweep. They win 3-2 in overtime last night. They move on to the conference finals. The Islanders win 5-4 of the Bruins. They lead that best of 7, 3-2. Tonight it's the Lightning and the Hurricane. The Lightning up 3-1, defending Stanley Cup champions. That's at 5:30 tonight on NBC Sports Network. Also on NBC Sports Network, Game 5, the Avs and the Golden Knights, which has been a fantastic series so far, and the team with the home ice has won all of the games so far in that series. And for a French Open update, I hand it over to Mr. Bud Collins. And if anybody knows that reference, I just might have to hook you up with movie tickets. If anybody can call me at 545-3220 and understand that reference that I just made, we made a segue to tennis, and I mentioned Bud Collins. If you know who Bud Collins is or was, I don't know if he's alive anymore. I think he passed away. But if you know who I'm referring to and you know that, then we have one big-time tennis fan in our midst, which I don't know if we have any, and I'll hook you up with movie tickets. 545-3220 if you can tell me who Bud Collins and the connection to tennis is, all right?
I don't even think I can tell you
who Bud Collins is. Wow! Can't even get my sports director.
I'm the tennis guy over. I'm a tennis guy, too, right?
Like, wow. That means I'm really old. Yeah. Okay. I'll throw it to Bud Collins Jr.
And Novak was in trouble yesterday. A 19-year-old Italian won the first two sets in tiebreakers, but he only won one game the rest of the match and actually had to retire because of injury, and he won 4-0 in the third set, or fifth set, excuse me, the third that Novak won. But so Djokovic moved on yesterday. Diego Schwartzman, Rafael Nadal all moving on. Federer again withdrew, so a walkover for Berrettini there on the men's side. So American Sofia Kenin, the number 4 seed, lost yesterday. On the women's side, the top 4 seeds are out of this tournament, and we're just getting ready to start the quarterfinals. So quarterfinal action going on today. At the French Open on the women's side, I believe.
By the way, the Nets hit 21 threes last night. The Nets are hitting threes. They ain't going to beat them. And one thing real quick. Roger Federer withdrew after winning 3 matches, and he said he basically listened to his body. He wants to – I think this is how I read between the lines. I think he used this as a tune-up all along. I think he had no intention of finishing the tournament because he knew he can't beat Nadal on clay anyway. And I think he's focusing on Wimbledon. That's his best chance to win one more major in his career because he's up there and he's had some injuries. But do you believe that? Do you believe that?
I 100% believe that.
Okay.
And he ended up on the same side of the draw as both Djokovic Djokovic and Nadal.
So he saw the writing on the wall.
Why am I going to?
Right. But let me ask you this, though. Is that right?
I don't think it is. I think if you enter, you play, right?
Yeah, right. So you won your third round match. If you knew you didn't want to go on, you played one more match. Now you just handed somebody a spot in the next round because you are defaulting and forfeiting. And the guy that played you, shouldn't he have the right to? He wanted, I'm sure, to play the next match. And Federer all along was sitting there going, now maybe he made his decision after the third match. I don't know. Maybe his leg was aching. But I just don't think that's right. I mean, he has the freedom to do it. He's one of the greatest of all time. But I don't think that's fair to the person he just played. And it's not fair to the bracket because that means somebody gets a walkover.
Yeah. I'm not a fan of it at all.
I mean, if you didn't think you could win the tournament anyway, then you probably shouldn't enter it, but whatever.
Yeah.
I guess there's a lot of people that enter the tournament and know they probably ain't going to win it, but I'm talking about, like, Federer, obviously.
Well, you are winning, too. Like,
yeah, you won.
It's not like a golfer comes in here and, like, he knows he's not going to make the cut, so he leaves day one.
Or something.
You know, I mean, he had such a bad day that it's like, nah, I'm not going to make the cut. I'm not going to finish this. This is a guy that was winning.
Yeah.
It was 3-0.
You don't see this very often.
Yeah,
I don't like it. Like, if you're worried about your body and get ready for Wimbledon, you shouldn't have played in the French Open. That's my opinion.
Yeah.
Find a tune-up tournament somewhere.
I mean, there's plenty of them out there.
There are plenty.
You know.
But anyway, former Giants coach Jim Fossils died.
Really?
Age of 71.
Wow.
Ah, wow. And Aaron Rodgers is absent at the start of Packers minicamp. No surprise there. And Pat Riley says he'd welcome LeBron back to the Miami Heat. What team wouldn't welcome LeBron James on their team? Can somebody help me out with that? Is there any NBA franchise that would not welcome LeBron on their basketball team? That comes from the duh category. Of course, Pat Riley is not stupid. He's really smart, but he don't have to be smart to figure that one out. How is that a story? If LeBron wanted to play with the Heat, I let him play. You think? You know, if Patrick Mahomes wanted to play quarterback for my team, I think I let him play for us. You think?
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.